You're listening to His Time. I'm Andy Bates, also in studio with me this morning, Joni Harwell. Good morning, Joni.
Good morning, Andy.
I am so excited about our next guest.
Oh, I am too. I have read most of this book, From Ghost to God in Ingoland, and I can tell you, this is a wonderful book on missions. If you want to read a great book on missions, get this book.
Joining us by phone this morning, Dr. Otto and Jill Hinsey, longtime missionaries to Papua New Guinea. Good morning, Mrs. Hinsey.
Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Hinsey.
Good morning, young mama.
Good to have you both with us this morning. Now, I bet that was, what language was that?
Young mama is the Inga language.
Very good, very good. What first drew you to consider serving as a missionary, Dr. Hinsey?
Well, it was my desire to do mission work, and the Lord put that in my mind in a way that recalls that it is God's mission to the people of the world. I was in El Paso, Texas. I grew up and there were no Lutheran schools there, and I attended
public
school most of the time, and I had determined that I would study for engineering, and so I studied at the College of Mines and Metallurgy in El Paso, Texas, and I was there for a year and a half studying the thing that I was going to engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, excuse me. I was there, and my chemistry professor, who was Dr. Jack Abernathy, accepted me as mm-hmm. as his lab assistant, but then he really did help by the witnessing to me day after day, and he kind of turned me to thinking of what I could do maybe for people in the world in mission work. And kind of set me to thinking about that, and so I decided not to go in mission work. Not to go into mm-hmm. the engineering, and to go into mission work. And it was Dr. Mundinger, who came from St. John's College, that pointed me to the seminary here in St. Louis. And otherwise, I was thinking that, as I had asked my pastor, where could I get some more instruction on the Christian faith?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, you want to go to the seminary? And so I said, oh, no, didn't think about that. But later on, I did think about it. And so I went to the seminary and became a pastor. And Papua New Guinea opened up about 1947. Hmm. It had been closed because of the murder of a couple of missionaries during the war. And there was a lot of evil things that were done by the Japanese to the people there in Papua New Guinea. But I was pointed to that, and I went to the seminary here in St. Louis in 1943. And so 43 to 47, I studied and prepared to go to Latin America and learn Spanish and so forth, because my father had grown up in El Paso, Texas, and become a real proponent of mission mm-hmm. to the Mexican people. And I was thinking about Latin America. And so all of it really points to how God led me mm-hmm. into mission work. And it was really wonderful, wonderful thing.
Jill, tell us about when you met.
Well, I was also attending St. John's College, but at that time, Otto had come down from St. Louis on his vicarage. And so I didn't really get to know him. However, I did attend his mission class that he had. And then I became a school teacher, and I was teaching in Kansas and went home for the, went to St. John's for the Thanksgiving homecoming. And he invited me to the basketball game, and so that's where that began. And then we were married in June of 1948, and soon after we were married, we realized that God was blessing us with our first baby. And since we didn't know anything about New Guinea at that time, I guess it was my parents who kind of encouraged me to let Otto go first and see what was there in the way of mm-hmm. housing and medical things. So he went ahead of me to New Guinea. And I stayed in Texas until after the baby was born. And then I took 2 weeks to go take the baby to Otto's parents in El Paso so that they could get acquainted and see him. And at that time, his parents bought a little bassinet bed for her. Mm-hmm. So after that, the baby and I rode the train out to California and were met by a couple of women from the Lutheran Women's Missionary League out there. And they housed us overnight and then took us to the plane the next morning to catch the plane. And well, that was when the baby was 3 months old, because they wouldn't let a baby fly before they were 3 months old. And that was quite an experience, my first plane flight. And it took, I think, 48 hours before we got to Australia.
Yes. Wow.
And then up with a smaller plane, and spending the night in Cairns, Australia, because the planes wouldn't fly into New Guinea overnight. And then it seemed like we got into such a little plane, it seemed almost like a toy by the time we got there. But it was wonderful to see Otto standing there at the airport to meet us. And then after that, we flew in together to the government station at Wabag.
And we walked. Both of us had to walk about 25 miles to the station where we were stationed at Yarramunda. And that was the regular trip to get supplies and other things that we had to make that walk. It took all day.
Dr. Hinsey, how did you learn to speak the language of the people there? I mean, you're going in as a, in the mission field, you told us you studied Spanish, but all of a sudden you're with a group of people and you don't necessarily understand their language. What did you do? How did you learn it so quickly?
Well, it wasn't very quickly. I mean, it took about 3 years before I could preach in it. And it's just, we had no training before we went about how to handle such a situation.
Wow.
Where you just had a spoken language, and then you were supposed to now write and try to translate the scriptures into it. And missionaries had to look in their mouths and see how the sounds are made. And then kind of, it was called phonetics. Mm-hmm. And then the next step is phonemics, and trying to take just all the sounds that are essentially the same and make an alphabet out of them.
So in those 3 years as you're studying, how are you communicating with the people there?
Well, we we learned a trade language, which many of them had learned. It was called Pidgin English.
Ah.
It took some of the, I guess, some of the words from German, from Spanish, from Malay, and from all in a Malay syntax called Pidgin English. Now, you may talk along this for that place. You talk along this for a place in New Guinea, and me good for the place. Now, that's something in Pidgin English.
Ah.
I could hear the English and German in there as well.
Mixed in there.
There were over 800 languages in New Guinea, and Inga was the largest language area. So interpreters would interpret then from the Pidgin English into the Inga so that the people could understand what was going on.
Beyond language, what were, or aside from language, what were some of the other biggest challenges in your, you know, first years there in New Guinea?
Well, as to getting to know their culture, I suppose that one of the big challenges was polygamy. And that we had, it's in my book how we handled that.
I think so. One of the big challenges for me was that there was no transportation of any kind. There were no horses, no bicycles, no motorbikes or any kind of vehicles.
Just two legs.
And the first walk that we did was 25 miles or so, but we broke that up into 2 days. And going over the mountains, walking over the mountains and crossing rivers over swinging bridges and going through an 800-foot river gorge and then climbing up to our first station at Yarramunda. And but my husband had built a cute little grass-thatched home for us and with the help from New Guinea men. And then when he wanted to put in windows, he would cut a hole in the wall and put in window panes that had made from X-ray plates from World War II.
Oh.
Those had been soaked in a lye solution to get the bones pictures off, but it let the light in. You couldn't see out, but it was, it let light in.
What was it like for you connecting with the other women there in New Guinea?
Well, that was quite interesting because I liked to garden, and every time I got into my garden, there were two elderly women who came to help me, and I think they thought of themselves as my mother or something. One of them was called, her Christian name was Tarai, which means Sarah, and her friend was Kiwaenda. And one day, Kiwaenda looked at me and she said, "Look at your hand." And I looked at my hand, and then she showed me hers. In those days, whenever one of their relatives died, they would cut off a digit of their finger to show
my.
How sorry they were to the relative, so that spirit of that relative would not come back to harm them. That was one of their beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "If you would have come a long time ago, I would still have my whole hand like you have yours."
Ah.
Because by that time she had learned that that was not a good thing to do, to cut your fingers off.
Oh, sure.
Another one big challenge in the medical work was the custom that the people had of, well, if they had twins, they would kill one of them.
Oh, my.
The midwife would kill one of them and make the choice of the mother. The mother could make the choice of which one she wanted to save.
Why did they want to kill one of them?
Because they thought that the ghosts of the ancestors had miscalculated in some way.
And I guess they were feeling like they were punished by having two children.
Yeah.
Because they didn't think they could take care of two of them.
Yes, our American missionaries came there and said, "Oh, well, that's something. Our children, our wives have two, three, four." And they said, "Our wives are not pigs.
Except we need to tell you a story about some twins. Some little twins were born, and we told the mother, don't kill the babies. We'll help you, you know, with feeding the babies and everything. So she kept the twins, and they grew up to be about 18 months old. And one day they toddled around and fell into a little pool of water, and both of them drowned. Hmm. And there was a nurse on the station, and Otto ran down, and the nurse was giving artificial respiration to one, and Otto took the other one and gave it artificial respiration, and God revived both those babies. Oh, they wow. began to breathe, and it was just a wonderful experience. This was one of the ways, I think, that the people learned to trust the missionaries, that they were there to help them and opened their hearts to hear the word of God. So we were thankful for that.
And yes.
That was a wonderful thing that happened.
Well, I want to share, we have just about a minute left. I want our listeners to find out more about your book, the name of the book, From Ghost to God in Ingoland. Where can we find out more about this book?
You can contact Amazon,
mm-hmm.
and Amazon dot
smile.
Put a slash mm-hmm. after Amazon, and you could order the book by its title.
And also at Ascension Lutheran Church this weekend, I believe, on both Saturday before and after the 5 p.m. service and Sunday between and after the morning services, you're going to be there signing the book. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Very good. Ascension Lutheran Church here in St. Louis?
In St. Louis.
In St. Louis here.
Very good.
And we're going to have a signing also here at the retirement home in Laclede.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. So we'll try to get the book out. The book is being printed, and many people have already bought a copy of it.
Very good. Well, thank you both.
$15.
Thank you both for being my guest today. Mrs. Jill Hensey, thanks for being our guest on His Time this morning.
It was very much of a pleasure.
And Dr. Otto Hensey, thanks for being our guest. Blessings to you both, and we'll see you at the book signing. Coming up in just a little bit, our study of the daily New Testament reading with Pastor Rasmussen this morning from Community Lutheran Church in South Burlington, Vermont. You're listening to His Time.